compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. Thanks again for listening. The number is 888-914-9149. You can call now. We have one line open. So grab it. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Lynn now in San Diego. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi.
How are you? Hi. I just had a quick question. I have two roommates that I live with, and I recently found out that one of them practices Reiki. And I know what it is. I was talking to her yesterday, just kind of playing dumb and asking her questions. And she says that she can do it from her bedroom or, you know, practice it pretty much anywhere. And she can do it from a distance or whatnot. And she can heal herself and other people. So my question is, her lease is coming up pretty soon. And do you think that's something that I should have her find somewhere else to live, but not say as why?
Mm-hmm. So she's your tenant, right? She's your tenant?
Yeah.
Okay. Have there been any other problems or any problems with her? Is she late on her rent or is she damaging the house or anything like that?
Mm-mm, no.
Okay.
No, we get along. She's quite nice. But I don't like the fact that she does, you know, Reiki, but I don't want to jump to conclusions. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm practicing Catholic. I'm in state of grace. I'm close to Jesus, sacraments, and everything. So what my question is it okay that she's living there?
I think so.
She's involved in that.
Yeah. I mean, if she were practicing Satanism or, you know, if she was having the local witches coven meet in her living room to cast spells, that would be maybe a different story. But she's a misguided woman who you said is following all the rules. She's fulfilling her contract. She's doing what you and she agreed to do. You're providing your service. She's providing her, you know, money. So certainly I don't think there's any reason to evict. Well, it wouldn't be an eviction, obviously, but you would just decline to renew the lease. I don't think that would be a good thing to do. And one reason is because, you know, as you mentioned, you are close to Jesus and you're seeking to do what's right. And one of the things that we know is right is to help other people. And this doesn't seem to constitute anything that would be a danger to you or anything. So I don't see any grounds here whatsoever to move her along. If anything, it could be an opportunity, if you're friendly with her, to evangelize her. And who knows, maybe God put her in this situation in your life for that reason. Be a good thing.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think of it that way.
The love of Jesus can go a long way in situations like this. But if if she's the model tenant and you, for some unexplained reason, don't renew her lease, you know, what would she be left to think? You know, if she didn't do anything wrong and yet this nice Catholic lady doesn't want her living there anymore, that's not so good.
No, I know. That's why I wanted to get your opinion, because I value it very much. And I just wanted to make sure I'm doing the right thing. And
that seems like the right thing to do. Now, obviously, you have probably in the provisions of your lease agreement that X number of, you know, times per year you can go in and inspect the property and whatnot. And there's no reason why you couldn't carry a bottle of holy water with you. You know, no problem with that. It's your house after all. But I think that would be the loving, friendly thing to do. And I always try to opt in that direction, you know?
Okay. So. Yeah. Okay. Well, I feel relieved. I feel better.
I'm glad.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much for your advice. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome, Lynn. Thank you. And enjoy that beautiful San Diego weather. It's the best weather in the world, if you ask me. Nancy and I lived there for years and loved San Diego.
Yeah.
Didn't like the congestion. We didn't like the congestion. But That's part of the price you pay if you want that beautiful weather. Let's go to Isabel now in Las Vegas. They say you're 14 years old. Isabel, welcome.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I don't know if you remember, but I called back a little while ago. I called in because I had an essay I was writing for my English class. Mm-hmm. About, it was argumentative, and it was about why I thought abortion was wrong.
Oh, I do remember that call. Yes,
yeah.
I do.
So I'd just like to thank you for your advice, because I did use it on my essay and I ended up getting an A.
Wonderful. So. Wonderful. Now, I don't honestly remember what advice I gave you. What did I tell you to, what did I recommend?
You recommended talking about, like, you know, human rights and, like, the Constitution. I think you mentioned the Dred Scott decision as well. Mm-hmm. Kind of, like, about saying that, you know, these humans, because I already had proved the point in a previous paragraph in my essay, why these embryo or uh-huh. whatnot, already human. And so you were just saying, like, to prove why they still had those same human rights. And I used that in my counterclaim. And
wonderful.
I got a pretty...
You got a what?
I got a pretty good score on that as well.
I'm so happy to hear that. That's
yeah,
great.
Thank you.
Did your teacher give you any follow-up remarks or notes on the paper or anything like that?
Yeah, she said it was a really strong essay. And the reason I had called in too was because, you know, she was liberal. So I asked you for, like kind of a way to explain it in a from like a non-religious viewpoint. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I still ended up getting a good grade on that. So yeah, I'd like to praise God and thank you for your advice.
That is beautiful. Well, I'm so happy for you, Isabel. That is exciting, and I'm sure your mom and dad were pleased too that you got an A on your essay.
Yes, they were.
Well, that's great. Have you given some thought yet to where you want to go to college when the time comes?
I'm thinking maybe I'll go to Franciscan University or another Catholic college, because Franciscan is where my parents met and they both went there.
I've known a lot of people who have gone there. And as the old joke goes, got their, you know, the women who get their MRS degree. You've heard that joke before, haven't you?
No.
yeah. It, you know, your MRS misses. But yeah, and I would say when the time comes, as you look around and consider, take a mm-hmm. look at the University of Mary. They're friends of Relevant Radio. And also Christendom College out in Front Royal, Virginia. So you're in Las Vegas, so no matter where you go, you're going to have to travel a ways. But there's some really good Catholic colleges. And given your track record thus far with... you know, this essay and your desire to stand up for your convictions and things, when you do decide on a Catholic college, I'm sure it's going to really help solidify those things for you.
Yes, thank you. I will definitely consider those.
You're welcome. Well, I'm so happy for you, Isabel. I really am. And I hope I hear from you again. Maybe next time you've got another thing like that, or just check in from time to time and let me know how things are going.
Thank you, Patrick. Have a good
You're
day.
Welcome. God bless you. That's cool. Cyrus, we should do a show of just calls from... Oh, wait, we did that show.
We did that. That was, she is sharp. That is sharp.
Was she in that show? I don't remember.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think she had called after we had started compiling that. But
so maybe what we should do is do another show just of teenagers. So we have the kids show from the first time around. Is that available anywhere? People could just go find that show and listen to it?
Yeah, all 3 hours are on the podcast page, relevantradio.com/Patrick.
What would they, would it say the kids show or all kids, or what would it say?
Yeah, you know, I can go there right now. I'll go to, I'm typing in relevantradio.com. I'm going into the search bar and I'm just saying all kids show.
And
let's see if it pops up. There it is.
Yep. All right.
Yep, okay. Easy peasy.
If you want to post it on Twitter just to be, you know, just to make sure people see it, it was really a great, and you did such a great job, Cyrus, because you had to do a lot of editing to make that work the way it did. But
I delegated. I practiced my delegation skills, and young Thomas really did the heavy lifting.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you, young Thomas. Well done, sir. So maybe we'll put on our list maybe a show just with teenage calls. That would be very interesting. Certainly a different kind of show, that's for sure. 888-914-9149. Steve in Covina, California, right off the 10 freeway.
All right,
good morning,
Steve
and
Rolo,
welcome.
The Steve Meister, asking me questions.
Making copies.
Good morning, Patrick. I'm drinking coffee. I'm not going to ask you how you're doing because you're doing great.
Yes, sir. You are correct, sir.
I have a question and then hopefully a couple of comments I can make very briefly after.
All right.
My question is, long story short, I generally try and favor like mom and pop businesses locally here. And I know you know about Covina, so you know the area. Mm-hmm. And I popped into this JoJo's Sweet Shack in Glendora. And it's the third time I've done so. But I was there close to end, and somehow we started talking about God. And so we were having this conversation, and then her husband came out from the back and said, I heard you talking about God, and I have a question. And here's my question. He said, and they're both really great Catholics from what I gather. He said, it just seems creepy, like cannibalism, that we're required to eat our Lord's flesh and drink his blood. And I know you've talked about this before, but can you give me a brief and more understandable explanation of how it's not cannibalism?
Yeah, I'll try. I'll give you the 60-second elevator speech. Number one, let's remember that Jesus himself said this, so we can be uncomfortable with it like the people were in John chapter 6, some of whom left Jesus because they couldn't accept it. But it is what Jesus himself taught. He said, my flesh is real food, my blood is real drink. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood has life within him. He who does not eat my flesh and does not drink my blood does not have life within him. So we're faced with this teaching, and we have to ask ourselves, what does Jesus mean by this? Well, he means it in a literal sense, that's for sure, but it doesn't constitute cannibalism for this reason. Cannibalism is the consumption of a dead human being, and Jesus is, number one, not dead. He is glorified, resurrected, and sitting at the right hand of the Father in heaven. So we're not consuming a dead body or portions of a dead body. Also, it's not cannibalism because that would be, as I say, consuming a dead body. And in this case, we are receiving the Lord's body, blood, soul, and divinity, but under the appearances of bread and wine. So the bread and the wine, the properties of the bread and the wine, rather, before the consecration remain. So our senses are detecting bread and wine, or breadness and wineness, even though Jesus is truly present sacramentally and substantially, meaning the reality of Jesus is there. So it doesn't rise to the level, or it doesn't fit the description or the definition of cannibalism per se. Now, if somebody were to press the point and say, well, you're just saying that it's not cannibalism because you're making a semantic distinction between a dead body and a living body, well, then you could respond by saying, well, is the little baby who's sucking at his mother's breast, is he involved in cannibalism because he's consuming, he's eating a byproduct of the mother's body? And the answer, of course, is no. So mothers who nurse their babies are not, well, in the case of the baby, is not engaging in cannibalism, even though he's consuming something from the mother's body. So that would be another argument that militates against this sort of crass notion that we're committing cannibalism. Now, those are a few things, a little bit more than 60 seconds, but those are things that I would bring up in a conversation like that.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. Okay.
You're welcome.
Comment number one, the Gene Scott thing.
Yep.
I'm about your age. I was born in 58. Okay. And so I remember being 10 years old and watching it exactly as you say on UHF. It was actually channel 52 here in Southern California,
which is where I grew up. So we might have been watching Gene Scott at the same time on the same channel.
I believe we were. And do you recall that he had that big giant 4x8 chalkboard?
Yep.
Yeah.
He would sit there in his bark lounger with his cowboy boots and his cigar and that big scraggly white beard. and go on and on and on. I watched them for entertainment purposes. I didn't believe a word he said, though.
Well, that was the thing. It was more like watching a segment of A Beautiful Mind or watching like a reenactment of Einstein, because while I was fascinated by the stuff he talked about, but I didn't see any correlation between what he was saying and God. Right. Okay. So, and you know, he had,
I used to like how he would berate the audience. He would get furious at the audience, practically cuss them out, even though he didn't curse. But he was just quite an amazing character. But anyway, in the interest of time, we have a break coming, Steve. Was that your comment, or did you have a comment?
Well, I just wanted to say his daughter is on the air now, and they had a mega church. But my other comment is about your path in San Juan Capistrano. And I'll do this real quick. About like pre-COVID, like months before COVID, my son surprised me with, he said, be at my house at 7, lives in Riverside, and says, wear walking shoes. And we got on the Metrolink, which I know you're familiar with, and we took the Metrolink from Riverside to San Juan Capistrano, which was an awesome train trip. We got off at 8:55, and then we walked to the new church in San Juan Capistrano.
That's cool.
And after that, we went to El Adobe for lunch.
That's a great restaurant, the Western White House, not too far from there. Thank you, Steve. Let's catch up another time. Our sponsor, Christendom College, offers our listeners access to free online classes at getprinciples.com/truth. Acclaimed philosopher Dr. John Cutteback is teaching a class now, Understanding Human Nature, at getprinciples.com/truth.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
They were just four guys. She made it very, very big, that's all. 888-914-9149. People are saying, what? Let us go now to Rick in Front Royal, Virginia, home of Christendom College. Welcome, Rick.
Hi.
Hello, Rick. Yes.
Hi there. Two comments. First one's lighthearted and the other one's more serious. Okay. Can you make a CD of the bumper music and make that available? Like you, that's my time frame. And every time I hear those songs, 10, 20 seconds worth, it's like lots of memories come back.
Man, I know how you feel about that, Rick. Well, we can't, because that would violate all kinds of copyright laws and things like that.
I wondered, but I was thinking maybe if it's only 20 seconds, but you know better than I do about that.
Well, what I can tell you is this, that we have to pay a hefty fee. And within the big picture of things, it's, you know, it doesn't break the bank, but it's a fee that we pay to the licensing agencies that enables us to play that kind of music. If you don't pay the fee, you can't play the music on the air, but we do. So it's a lot of fun for me and you and people like us, Rick, from the 1900s. We can relive our glory days with the music that we hear on this program.
Yep. I wasn't sure if you had to pay a fee for that. Here's the more serious comment. I usually listen to you while I'm driving, so I can't get on the phone right away. Okay. But last week, there was the woman who called in about letting her kids wait for their adults to be baptized.
Right. Letting them decide what religion they wanted to be and wait until they grew up, right? Yep.
Yep. Baptism, confirmation, CCD, go to mass, what religion, all of that. And my response was, I taught public government school for 30 years in New York, and the schools and the liberals and the extremists are not waiting for our children to make their own decisions. Yeah. We see that even more today, but it's like, no, they're not waiting.
No,
why should you
waiting.
Wait?
They seek to indoctrinate the kids in a variety of ways. That's true. So I'm with you. I mean, as I recall, my point was last week that when you hear somebody say, well, we're just going to wait and teach our kids, you know, or let our kids decide what when they get to be adults, to me, that just smacks of laziness because it means
yep. Well, I agree with that too. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we're on the same page. Got it.
Yep. No, we are. And it was just there again. I saw that and fought that battle. And there's a good chunk of teachers, even in the public schools, who are on the same page. They just want to teach their subject. They like their students, their kids. And it's like, just leave all this other stuff out there. I know the math teachers are going crazy with math is racist.
Yeah. Everything is racist if they, yeah, I know what you're saying. Well, yep. Good points.
And another warning there too was, there, at least when I was there, there were the I call them the re-education classes. Mm. You don't agree with this, then you're going to be in here for a week or a month learning how to be more cooperative.
It's another good reason to consider homeschooling, if you ask me. Catholic school is a great option if you have a good Catholic school nearby. But some people don't have that option. So if it were me between homeschooling and public school, I would choose homeschooling 10 times out of 10 if I had that option. Thanks, Rick. And by the way, we did have that option. So if you're wondering what did Nancy and I do back in the day, I would say we homeschooled it, but that wouldn't... let me stop. I would say we homeschooled our children, but that would not be accurate because I didn't do any of the schooling Nancy did. So I have to give her tremendous credit for... There are plenty of other things that she might like to have been doing, but she just was really there for the kids. She was a stay-at-home mom, and we were a one-income family, always have been. And so once we decided to go in the direction of homeschooling, she was just an excellent teacher, and she was patient and did a really good job of homeschooling the kids. And they all went off in their different directions and are doing different things and successes in each in their own way. One that I like to point to, though, is that we have a son who is a nuclear engineer by training in the Navy. He was a nuclear engineer and actually taught at the nuke school down in South Carolina, and he learned math at the kitchen table. So, yes, homeschooling does have its advantages.
Fact.
Let's go to Mary now in Raleigh. Good morning, Mary. Hi, Mary.
I got a bad feeling about this.
There she is. Okay, Mary. We're on the air. Yeah, Mary's not ready. Well, maybe Sarah, if you could check in with Mary and see what's up. Let's go to Gilbert now in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Good morning, Gilbert.
Good morning, Patrick. Good to talk to you. You know,
Thank you. Last week
you mentioned Dr. Lovacchino, and I was wondering at one of his presentations, and it motivated me to call you after you mentioned him. You know, we just arrived from Spain, from a trip to Spain. Mm-hmm. And my question that I had for you, and I was really moved by it because I wasn't aware of it when I went, and it's, are you familiar with Our Lady she's called Our Lady de Desamparados, Our Lady of the Forsaken.
Yeah, not offhand, I'm not. But what about that?
Okay, and it was terrific to me because Our Lady of the Forsaken. She's looking down. She's holding Christ, and there's two children at her side, and it represents so many things of life of the Forsaken, totally. And mm-hmm. I was so moved by it. And Saturday was her feast day, and I think people should look that up because it's very, especially if you're pro-life and it has to do with the Holy Innocence, and it's such a great thing. And I was so moved by the fact that when I went to Spain, our Catholic faith is alive and well. It was so motivating to see that.
I'm glad.
During St. Jude, I think St. Jude's feast day was last week, and it was a holiday for them. And I thought, oh my gosh, thank you, Lord.
And thanks for the call, Gilbert. I appreciate it very much. I wasn't familiar with that particular Marian apparition or Marian devotion, but thanks for letting me know about it. And thanks for the call. I recall on one of our trips to Spain, Nancy and I were there, going back, how long ago was it? You know, 10 years, 12 years ago. And we wanted to go to Mass. We were staying in this beautiful farmhouse that had been converted to this place that would sleep like, you know, 15 people. And it was out in the countryside and just really a tranquil, peaceful place out in the middle of nowhere. And so on Sunday, the first Sunday that we were there during our visit, we wanted to go to Mass. So we went into the nearby town. And there's this huge Catholic church in the center of town, as so many of the towns have. And it looked as though the church had been there for 1,000 years, and probably was, or at least close to it. So we went there, and time for Sunday Mass, and there was no Sunday Mass. And the doors were locked, and it was Sunday. It was like, you know, 9 a.m. And so I asked one of the people who were walking by, I said, is there any Mass here? And he says, oh, well, they do have Mass in the crypt below the main church. And this was a big church. This is a church bigger than your church, I'll put it that way. Whatever Catholic parish you go to, this church was bigger than that. And it was entirely empty. So we go down, there's a little door, goes down into the crypt chapel. And sure enough, Mass was just about to start. So there was a priest there. He was vested. He was standing at the altar, young guy. And there were, I kid you not, probably 6 people, all of them very old people. There were no young people there whatsoever. So you had like 6 people, very elderly, and they were huddled in this little crypt chapel. And all of a sudden, in comes the Madrid family. So Patrick and Nancy and, you know, I forget how many of the kids we had with us at that time, probably, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 of our kids in various age groups. These people, it was as if Martians had landed. It was as if Martians had landed and had gotten out of the spaceship, and they could not take their eyes off of this big Catholic family. And the thing that I really was struck by was how in this town, and if you want to look it up on a map, the name of the town was Calaf, C-A-L-A-F, it's outside of Barcelona. And we were staying at this farmhouse, you know, maybe 4 or 5 miles away from that, out in the countryside. These people had not seen kids at Mass in forever. So we were there for Mass, the whole thing, and they were watching us during Mass. They should have been paying attention to Jesus, but they couldn't help themselves. They're looking at us. So when Mass was over, we're like visiting with everybody. And the priest, you know, we like tripled the number of people who were there for Mass that Sunday morning just by showing up. And he was telling me some unbelievable stories about how difficult and bad things have gotten as far as the faith is concerned in Spain. And that is, when he first told me, I said, that can't be, you can't be, I mean, you're joking, right? Because he said he was in charge of like 12 parishes. And I said, that can't be real. He said, yeah. He says, there are no vocations. And he said, it's actually easy because not only are there very few vocations, but no one's going to Mass. So it's not like I've got this big difficulty of thriving parishes that I have to administer. He says, I can easily cover this territory. And he can't get to 12 churches on a Sunday, obviously, but he would visit a church maybe once every 6 weeks or something like that. But his point was that the faith had collapsed nearly entirely. There are good Catholic folk in Spain. That's true. It's true in Italy. It's true in France. It's true in other formerly Catholic countries. But it's a very small minority. And so this is what those older people were so struck by. And they asked us, like, do you guys go to Mass every Sunday? Well, of course. Of course we do. They couldn't even imagine it because none of their kids go to Mass anymore. Their grandchildren don't go to Mass. They're barely hanging on by their fingertips going to Mass. Nobody goes to Mass. And that's what they told me. They said, the reason we have Mass in this crypt chapel is because nobody goes to Mass. And they have this huge, beautiful, ancient parish church that's a treasure to behold. And nobody goes to Mass anymore. So, moral to the story for me personally was that country, where many of my forefathers and foremothers come from, hence the name Madrid, that used to be a powerhouse of the Catholic faith. It was a powerhouse, much like Ireland used to be and no longer is, and many of these other formerly Catholic countries, producing, you know, so many countless priests and religious sisters and missionaries and scholars and saints and all that. And now it's basically zilch. So my takeaway was, if I don't want to see that happen here where I live in the United States, and you and I take for granted, at least I think I do, and you probably do too, you take for granted, well, our parish church is open and we've got people there and people are having kids and getting married and baptisms and such. That's great, but there's no guarantee that it'll stay that way. So think about places like Spain and Ireland and other places that have slid so far into the darkness of secularism. We don't have any guarantees that that won't happen here. So this is where the hope and encouragement part comes in. You can be part of the solution for making sure that things don't slide in that direction. Teach your children the faith. Make sure that they understand not just that you have to go to Mass on Sunday, but why do they go to Mass? Why do they believe in Jesus? Do they believe in Jesus? Find out. And inculcate in them a lively and deep sense of who Jesus Christ is. Why did he die on the cross? Why is it that it's so important that we follow him? Jesus said, I assure you that unless you repent, you too will all perish. So he's reminding us of the reality of heaven and hell. This is why he established the church. This is why he gave us the sacraments. This is why all of this, the things that Jesus gives us in and through the Catholic Church that he established are so important. And when we lose sight of that, things begin to drift. And I hope and pray, and this is one reason why I'm so grateful to be part of Relevant Radio, and you should be so grateful that you have Relevant Radio to listen to. We should all be grateful for it, because they didn't have this kind of thing. Obviously, technologically, it wasn't possible, but they didn't have this kind of thing in France, in Ireland, and other places like that. Who knows? Maybe those countries would still be Catholic if they had Relevant Radio. And by the way, shout out to all of our listeners in such countries. Please tell all your friends and family about Relevant Radio wherever you may be in the world, and have them download the Relevant Radio app, and we'll start a revival. Wouldn't that be great? I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Get the best premiums and discounts, all without charging fees, through Mission Insurance Solutions, part of the Notre Dame Federal Credit Union family. Go to yourmissioninsurance.com. That's yourmissioninsurance.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Well, let's get right back to the phones. Kristen in Appleton, Wisconsin, thank you for listening and welcome.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks so much for taking my call this morning.
You're welcome.
It is a great segue from your last caller and just the discussion about Sunday Mass that you had and the decrease of faith really in the country of Spain. But my question is related to the Sunday Mass obligation. So, of course, we know we are called to go to Mass every single Sunday. But recently I've been having some issues because I have a young child. And when I go to Mass, I know that I'm there, I'm receiving the Eucharist, I'm trying to pay attention as best I can. Yeah. But my child is in that stage where she wants to run around and she's screaming dada and what have you. Yeah. And so I know I'm not as focused as maybe I would have been in, you know, my non-married single years, if you will. So my question to you is, I know in the examination of conscience, they say, are you going to Mass on Sunday and are you attentive? Are you paying attention? So it's that last part that I'm struggling with. And I just want to know what your take is on that and how best to, you know, make sure that we're receiving the word and, you know, being present, but, you know, also taking care of a young child.
Yeah. Yes. Well, the work of a busy mom never ends, does it? And I can remember when Nancy was a young mom, you know, and I was a young dad and just trying to corral the kids at Mass. So first of all, I think it's great that not only that you're at Mass, obviously, but that you're bringing your child to Mass, bring the children to Mass from the earliest age, and they will gradually learn how to comport themselves. In the meantime, though, you are not doing anything sinful or wrong if you are experiencing distraction, because it's not what you intend. You desire to be more focused if possible, but it's just not possible because you're fulfilling your Sunday obligation. You are physically there at Mass. That's the obligation. The more you can put into it and the more you can get out of it from an emotional and intellectual and spiritual standpoint, so much the better. But you are, and God understands, you are busy trying to take care of this bouncy little girl. So there's nothing wrong with that. And if you're wondering if it's sinful or anything like that, please put that thought out of your mind. You're doing the best you can, and God understands that.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Did I hit the bullseye? Was that the question? I want to make sure I answered the real question.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think it was just really hitting that point. Like, is there something additional I needed to do? Because, you know, I missed the first reading because I was corralling a child. Or not that I missed it, but that I wasn't, you know, hanging on to every word, if you will.
Yeah. No, you're doing the best you can. The Lord knows that. He smiles at you because of your state in life. You know, you're busy. I mean, I think about all the times in which people, and let's just take someone in your situation, you're a young, busy mom, a lot of kids. You probably, if I had to guess, don't have a lot of spare time to pray like without distraction. And so you pray with distraction. You do the best you can with the energy level and the noise level and everything else. You do the best you can. That in itself, I think, is pleasing to God. You're doing the best you can with His grace, and He smiles on that. So no need to be concerned, in my view.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Great chatting with you. How about Joshua now in Albuquerque, our second Albuquerque call of the day? Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. I still haven't found what I'm looking for, but...
Sounds like a title for a song.
Yeah. Last time you asked me about... I'm not calling from Joshua Tree, so... my question is...
we're on the edge.
The church...
Go ahead, Joshua.
Yeah. If the Catholic Church were to ordain women priests and deaconesses, I know the Pope John Paul II said they can't be done, but if they were, would you attend a Mass presided over by them?
Nope.
At all, huh?
Nope. Negatory, good buddy.
That's good to know. That's
my alter ego. Yeah. Pope John Paul II, Ordinatio Sacerdotalis, Latin for on priestly ordination. He said in no uncertain terms that the sacrament of holy orders is reserved to men alone. And he gives the reasons. And, you know, at the very end, I want to read to you for the benefit of those who maybe are not familiar with it, but I want to read to you how he concluded this, because it's very important that people understand this. So he goes through the reasons why the sacrament of holy order is reserved to men alone, and this has nothing to do with men being better or anything else like that. He just gives all the reasons. Jesus did not select any women, didn't even choose his own mother, who was higher and better and more holy than any of the apostles was, and he didn't choose her. So he ends his document, this is an apostolic letter, so he ends it this way. He says, "Wherefore, in order that all doubt may be removed regarding a matter of great importance, a matter which pertains to the Church's divine constitution itself, in virtue of my ministry of confirming the brethren," referencing Luke 22:32, "I declare that the Church has no authority whatsoever to confer priestly ordination on women, and that this judgment is to be definitively held by all the Church's faithful." So this was given, did I say 1988? I don't know if I said when, but it was 1994 that he gave this. Now, the reason I reference this is because in that last sentence, he refers to priestly ordination, but he this is understood by the church's sacramental theology as holy orders as such. So the fundamental or the entry-level holy orders, if you want to put it that way, is the diaconate, followed by the priesthood, followed by the episcopacy. And so to say, on the one hand, that men can or women cannot be ordained priests, it, in my view, it includes by it, it's implicitly contained that they could not be ordained to the diaconate. Now, some people say, but Patrick, there were women deacons in the early church. That's true. There were. And there's actually there have actually been a number of really helpful studies, historical studies done on this, including one called Deaconesses in the Early Church, published by Ignatius Press. Very helpful. And what you'll see is that they were not ordained to the sacrament of holy orders, as men who received the diaconate are. They were called deaconesses, and they fulfilled roles very similar to what the male deacons did, but they did not receive the sacrament of holy orders. And they were, in, if we want to translate it into a more modern context, they would be more recognizable to us in the 21st century as fulfilling a role very similar to that of a religious sister. So service and ministry, etc., but not the sacrament of holy orders. So for this reason, those who are banging on and on and on, including those in Germany, who are pushing and pushing and pushing for the sacrament of holy orders, at least at the level of the diaconate, to be open to women, are simply ignoring, and I think intentionally so, the express statement by Pope John Paul II. And they say, well, that's going to change in due time, and et cetera, et cetera. So, no. I think that's the simplest way I can answer that question. Thank you, Joshua. Let's go to Jonathan now in Northern California. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning. I'm a practicing Catholic, and I returned to the church. I left the church, and it's I'm been back 5 months, and I did my confessions, and I'm taking the Eucharist. My question is, we had all our children baptized when they were babies.
Okay.
They don't have faith. Is it the faith of their parents and godparents?
Mm-hmm. Say the last question.
Okay. Since they're too young to have faith when they're getting baptized, is it the faith of the parents and godparents?
Oh, I see. Well, in a way similar to how, you know, the story in the Gospels of the man who is paralyzed and his friends brought him to Jesus. They made the hole in the roof and they lowered him down. Remember that story?
So yeah,
it's an interesting allusion there. It doesn't deal with baptism per se, but there's an interesting allusion there that God healed this man on the basis of the faith of his friends who brought him. It doesn't say anything about the man himself wanting to go. And maybe he did. It just doesn't tell us. But it does tell us that his friends are the ones who brought him there and Jesus worked this miracle. So there's a little tidbit there that we can glean from that. By way of parallel, of course, baptism replaces circumcision from the Old Testament. And you'll note that the 8-day-old boy who was circumcised, he didn't know what was going on, and he certainly wouldn't have asked for this if he did know what was going on. But it was his parents who brought him into the covenant by this ordinance of circumcision. Now, baptism replaces circumcision. It completes it and perfects it and is higher than circumcision, which was merely a symbolic action. Baptism actually accomplishes what it symbolizes. So, to your question, it's not the faith of the parents per se that causes what happens in baptism to happen. It's the power of Jesus Christ working in the sacrament that causes the obliteration of sin, the removal of the condition of original sin and the infusion of sanctifying grace. Jesus is the one who does that. It's not the faith of the parents or the priest or anyone else, but the faith of the parents is instrumental to that taking place. So their faith in bringing their child into the church for baptism is, you might say, the efficient cause of the sacrament of baptism being celebrated. But the effects of the baptism itself, the efficient cause of that, is Christ himself. So I don't want to over answer your question, but does that give you what you're looking for, Jonathan?
Yes. I just didn't know what is, since I'm new of coming back to the church, I just didn't know the answer on that one.
That's okay.
All our kids have been baptized as babies.
And they're all adults now, I take it. Is that right?
No. I'm age 66, and my twin boys are 13, and my daughter is 15.
Got it. Okay. So you married a little later in life, or at least you had children later in life, which is awesome that God blessed you that way. My advice, Jonathan, would be to be as diligent as you can be in a loving, you know, balanced, normal way, but be diligent in teaching your children about Jesus, helping them to understand who Jesus is, why he is Lord, why we follow him, and so on. Make sure that you do everything you can to help them grow strong in the faith and the sacraments and in catechesis. Have religious images in your home. Enthrone the Sacred Heart image of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart image of Mary in your home. Have a crucifix. You know, make sure that people who walk into your home know that this is a Catholic place. And you're doing this primarily for your children. Let them grow up in the household of faith. Let them see you, Jonathan, and your wife as examples of Christian piety. Let them see you pray. Let them see you be joyful and all the other things associated with following Jesus. Let them see that in you, because you're going to be an icon to them of what it means to be a good Catholic. Turn them on to Relevant Radio. In fact, I hear from time to time parents and even school teachers who say that they make listening to Relevant Radio part of the curriculum in some cases. So you might want to do that and just find a creative way to weave that into their daily lives so that they grow up listening to Relevant Radio and learning the faith in more and deeper ways as well. These are all things I would recommend, Jonathan. And God bless you. So great that you've been blessed with children this late in life. Let's go to Nader now in Bakersfield. Good morning, Nader.
Hello. Good morning, Patrick. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm very thankful.
You're welcome.
Patrick, I just had a question for the gentleman that called before, or a comment, or I just wanted to see if I can get your thoughts on it. He did mention about, like, if there was, like, a priestly vocation for women and that you wouldn't go. Does that apply to when the father consecrates the host, and is it okay to receive Holy Communion, like, from a woman, you know, like a Eucharistic minister?
Mm-hmm. Well, the answer would be the ordinary minister of Holy Communion is the priest who celebrates that Mass. Now, it may be that because of the number of people that it would take unduly long for him to distribute Holy Communion. So if there's a deacon, he too is an ordinary minister of Holy Communion. So ideally, the priest and the deacon would distribute Holy Communion. Now, that's not the norm anymore. And within the last, say, 40 years or so, 50 years or so, there has arisen a kind of novelty that has been greatly exaggerated beyond what it really calls for, and that is extraordinary ministers of Holy Communion. And there is a legitimate place in the life of the church for this ministry. But it's an extraordinary situation. And so it's only really necessary if there are sufficient numbers of people that it would be unduly long for the priest and the deacon or the priest himself to distribute Holy Communion. What has happened is, in my view at least, in a misguided and wrongheaded sense, people have thought that we need to get the lay people more engaged. We need to get them busy doing things. So let's give them stuff to do. And based upon what I would view as faulty ecclesiology and faulty sacramental theology, one of the efforts was to push for lay people to distribute Holy Communion, which traditionally, at least under normal circumstances, was never done. There were extraordinary circumstances where it might need to be done in the case of a village far from any priest who could visit on a regular basis, and the catechist, a lay person, typically would distribute Holy Communion. So there are instances like that, or bringing Holy Communion to the sick and such. But in the ordinary day-to-day life of the church, when that's not necessary, it's not necessary. But in the average American parish, it has gone so far beyond the actual legitimate needs of extraordinary ministers that you see situations where there are, you know, not nearly enough people there that would require extraordinary ministers, lay people, and yet there they are, because that's the custom, and people have become so accustomed to it that to them it seems like it's how it should be. But I would say it really shouldn't be that way outside of exceptions. So what about receiving Holy Communion? Well, if that's the person who's distributing Holy Communion, you're not doing anything wrong by receiving communion from him or her. Ideally, it should be from the priest and or a deacon. But we're living in a strange time in the life of the church now where many of these traditional aspects of liturgy and sacramental theology have been forgotten or ignored. So we have to live in the church as it is right now. So that would be my suggestion. Be grateful to receive Holy Communion at all if you can. And so much the better if the ordinary minister of Holy Communion, the priest, is the one who's distributing it. Thank you for that. I realize I can't take any more calls just because the time is up, but we're going to do it again tomorrow, God willing, and the creek don't rise. Same Pat time, same Pat channel, right here on Relevant Radio. And between now and then, I'll pray for you. And I do ask you to please pray for me. God bless you. You've got some great ideas, Cyrus.